Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Illuminating Our True Nature, Yogic Practices for Personal and Collective Healing by Michelle Cassandra Johnson. Narrated by Michelle Cassandra Johnson. Foreword. The summer of 2020 is deeply etched in my memory. The summer of civic unrest and nationwide protests, people uprising the world over for justice, for Black liberation. I was searching, seeking, praying, looking for answers. I had many questions, much to unpack, unravel, and unlearn about the country I had come to as a starry-eyed immigrant from India. How do I show up as a brown woman? How can I serve this moment of racial reckoning as a yoga practitioner? How can the teachings and the practices of my ancestors support and heal this wounded world we live in? I found a book called Skill in Action, Radicalizing Your Yoga Practice to Create a Just World by Michelle Cassandra Johnson. Michelle's words gave wings to a dream, to many dreams, of practicing the teachings of yoga in the times we live in. Since then, I have studied with her in her race and resilience programs, worked with her in different capacities as a colleague, and been a guest teacher in her offerings. It has been a true honor to be in community with her. Michelle's work invites us to practice the teachings of yoga unflinchingly as skillful, courageous, and compassionate action, to examine the tenets as an anchor for self and collective transformation. We cannot turn away from the overwhelm about the future of the planet. We cannot deny the threat posed by unbridled human consumption. We cannot bypass the impact of colonization that continues to manifest in our institutional and systemic DNA. We cannot afford to be silent when body autonomy is negated by draconian laws over reproductive rights and relentless attack on trans rights. Authoritarian governments, neo-fascism, and religious fundamentalism are on the rise all over the world. There is a sharpened polarization based on political ideologies and economic disparities. More than ever, we are in need of solace and healing of intergenerational and historical trauma. More than ever, we need practices that will hold us and offer succor as we learn, unlearn, and unravel our individualistic samskaras, metabolize our grief, shame, guilt, and anger. More than ever, we need to peel away the layers of our ignorance and reveal our undeniable interconnectedness. More than ever, we need the steadfastness of people devoted to collective care. More than ever, we need the liberatory teachings of yoga to shine a light on our deeply entrenched cultural conditioning, our socialized biases about those who are different from us. There is much ignorance, denial, and erasure of the expansiveness of yoga in dominant culture. Yoga is perceived and practiced mainly as a fitness modality. However, yoga is a multidimensional system of techniques, paradigms, tenets, traditions, and lineages, delving into the complexities of the human experience. The teachings explore our innate yearning and potential for liberation from samsara, the cyclicality of creation, sustenance, and destruction. One of the core teachings of yoga is that pain, dukkha, is inevitable in the human experience. Each of us is unique, and yet we are all the same. We may come from diverse backgrounds, speak different languages, have varied lived experiences, and yet we all seek a release from that which causes us pain. The practice of yoga cultivates discernment, viveka, into the myriad causes of our suffering and reveals our intuitive wisdom, buddhi. The teachings from the Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita, and Patanjali's Yoga Sutras have influenced, inspired, and informed many social change movements. The Yoga Sutras have been at the center of many periods in human history when there was a dire need for social change and collective transformation. From ancient Arab Muslim court ministers to Buddhist and Jain scholars, from Hindu anti-colonial revolutionaries to European Indophiles, the Yoga Sutras have offered solace and quenched the deep-rooted human thirst to know and uproot the causes of our suffering. Swami Vivekananda, the charismatic orator, philosopher, and social reformer, toured the United States in 1893, articulating the esoteric wisdom of the Upanishads, the Gita, and the Sutras. His lectures were published in his classic book, Raja Yoga, in 1895, in which there was a transcription of his commentary on the Yoga Sutras. As this was the first English language commentary, it was a turning point in the history of the sutras, which had gone into obscurity for multiple reasons in India. Vivekananda's revival not only galvanized Indians in India with an effervescent national pride in the spiritual heritage of their ancestors, it also drew international recognition and curiosity about the practice of yoga as a gateway for self-transformation. The Yoga Sutras is considered the quintessential text for yoga practitioners, as it offers secular, systemic insight into means through which a seeker can be on a path to moksha, liberation. The Yoga Sutras are informed by dualistic philosophy, or Vaieta, which posits that there is pure consciousness, or an ultimate, unchanging reality, or consciousness, which is called Ishvara by Patanjali. It is also called Purusha in Samkhya philosophy, which is very closely related to the yoga philosophy of the sutras. We are infused with this consciousness that is immutable, unmeasurable, and omnipresent. Then there is Prakriti, manifest nature or primordial matter. All of tangible and subtle matter is Prakriti and is subject to the laws of creation and dissolution. Prakriti is diverse, ever-changing, and impermanent. The goal of yoga is to realize that we are in essence, consciousness, spirit, immortal. We are whole. We are complete. It is our attachment to Prakriti that causes us dukkha. There are fewer than four verbs in the Yoga Sutras, and yet this esoteric composition attributed to Patanjali is packed with action. We are guided with a firm and gentle hand toward the goal of enlightenment, our true nature that is divine and whole. The aphorisms are terse and obscure, and hence there is an imperative to study the text through commentary. This soteriological goal of sutras is methodically addressed by ancient and modern commentators. Illuminating our true nature invites us to reflect on the kleshas, afflictions, as points of inquiry into the causes of dukkha, suffering. Michelle offers powerful reflections that illuminate how these afflictions manifest in our personal lives and are the building blocks of harmful systems and institutions. The book skillfully weaves ways in which the kleshas form and shape the world we live in, and offers antidotes to transform and metabolize reflections so we can embody the teachings in our everyday lives. There is a refreshing directness in the work that compels us to unravel our deeply embedded conditioning so we can be in right relationships with each other and the planet we call home. To embody the teachings of yoga with dedication is not for the faint of heart, nor is it a straight line. We encounter a wild path strewn with obstacles within our minds, our psyches. We need to sort through a quagmire of samskaras that drives a wedge of separation between us. These samskaras build false and harmful social stratifications based on race, class, gender, ability, and caste. This book is an enlightening resource, as it shines an unwavering light onto the internalized and manifested obstacles, offering a needed framework for reconciliation, reconnection, and remembrance of our inherent interconnectedness. May this work light up our paths so we may go forth with Shraddha, dedication in our quest for liberation. May we boldly envision and co-create spaces of care. May we dedicate ourselves to heal the brokenness of the world around and within us. May we be at ease in our differences. May we witness each other's magic. May we hold the other's humanity with tenderness. May we courageously confront harm as it happens. May we love each other fiercely, and may that love translate into action. Anjali Rao, teacher, intersectional health advocate, and activist. Acknowledgements. First and foremost, I want to acknowledge and honor the ancient practice of yoga. I bow in deep gratitude to the ancient ones who created a holistic system based on the absolute truth that we are interconnected to all things, time, and space. Thank you to my teachers, not only the teachers who have met me on this path of yoga in physical form and translated teachings from their various backgrounds and lineages to me, but also to the texts, the Yoga Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, and all of the other inspiring ways the teachings of yoga have been shared with me. Thank you to Skill in Action, radicalizing your yoga practice to create a just world. As a book and body of work channeled through me, you opened an opportunity for me to teach from my heart and transform the wellness industry. You opened a door for me to study the path of yoga more deeply. You led me to so many beautiful humans who share the same interest as I do, to actively decrease the suffering on and to our planet. Thank you to my editor, Beth Frankel. This is a long overdue thank you for seeing my magic right away, and for this particular project, asking me to channel my magic in a specific way. I am not sure I ever would have written about the kleshas without you prompting me to do so over green tea and tofu saganaki. Thank you for being a light, truth teller, star, guide, and friend. Much love. And may we weave magic in many ways in the future. Thank you to my friend Thajal Patel, who wisely told me that it was going to be interesting for me to write about the kleshas. She indicated, using different words than the ones written in this note of acknowledgement, that I would be confronted by each klesha as I wrote about it. She was right. Her wisdom was medicine. And at points when I wanted to stop writing this book, I thought of her, because yoga is a confrontative practice. It asks us to see ourselves wholly, accept who we are, and change at the same time. Thajal, you may not know how your words struck me when I shared about this project with you, but they did to the core. Thank you to Tristan Katz. You have been on this path with me for quite some time. You have always supported me. You have shared with me when what I have written has touched your heart in some way. You have believed in me and my magic and celebrated me countless times. I cannot wait to celebrate you more. I cannot wait to hold your future book in my hands and bless it. You are magic. Please always remember you are magic. As always, thank you to my ancestors. This book wasn't easy to write, and your constant abiding love and support gave me everything I needed to continue to write and believe in myself as I did. Thank you for believing in me. Thank you for resourcing me. Thank you for channeling through me. Thank you to my mother, Clara. Mom, I've written so many of these acknowledgments now, but the value of each one written about you never decreases. You are my light. You are my heart. I am because you are. Thank you for talking about God with me. Thank you for understanding we talk about God in different ways, you from the Bible and Christianity, and me from yoga philosophy, Buddhism, paganism, and the Hindu pantheon. Thank you for understanding that when I meditate, I am praying. And when I strive to live my yoga, I do so in a prayerful way. Thank you for teaching me about practice and devotion. Thank you for being the kindest person I know. Thank you for breathing. Thank you for being. You, my dear, are everything. Thank you to Charles, my husband, partner, friend, playmate, lover, and firekeeper. Thank you for listening when I told you I was writing about the reasons why we suffer. Thank you for encouraging me to continue to look at the ways we suffer. Thank you for praying for the end of suffering in your own way. Thank you for bringing me joy and laughter. Your silliness is the levity I am drawn to and need, because so often what I am working on or writing about is so serious. Thank you for always believing I can do whatever I put my mind to. Thank you for being you. Thank you to my best friend, Amy. You are my soul sister, always and forever. Even though you had no idea what I was talking about when I mentioned the kleshas, you offered to listen to my musings about them as a sounding board and support person. Thanks for believing in me and calling in all the good things with and for me. I love you because you are part of what makes the experience of being human more bearable, fun, and beautiful. Besties forever. Thank you to Jasper. Oh, Jasper, you are the most magical familiar I get to spend time with. Thank you for sitting next to me during my morning meditation and calling in all the words for my writing projects. Thanks for letting me know when to take breaks to get outside and feel the air. Thank you for cuddling up next to me as I wrote. Thank you for protecting me and loving me so deeply. Thank you for being here now. I love you, sweet being. I love you. Thank you to all who have supported this and past writing projects, yoga workshops, retreats, teachings, and musings. Thank you for being part of a vast web of people who desire to create a liberated world for all. We are always held by a much wider web than we think. And I am grateful to be held by you all, those in my web who are known to me and unknown in such a profound and stunning way. Introduction. A particular kind of sensitivity. someone who is searching for clarity becomes sensitive because the eyes must be open, even if what they see is sometimes very unpleasant. Someone who is searching feels or sees things long before other people do. He or she develops a special insight, a particular kind of sensitivity. We would see this positively. This insight or sensitivity can be as useful as a warning light in a car. It tells us that there is something wrong, and we would be wise to find out what it is. Someone who is searching for clarity always sees more suffering than someone who is not. Sri TKV Desikachar, The Heart of Yoga. My mother and I were driving across the James River Bridge in our 1970 blue Datsun station wagon. We crossed over the bridge and were about to head down near the river en route to our home. I looked over at my mom and said, "I don't want to have children." Puzzled, she looked at me and asked, "Why are you thinking about that now, Michelle?" I replied, "This world doesn't make sense to me, and I don't want to bring a child into it. The world is violent, and I don't want to bring a child into it." She said, "Okay, Michelle, you do not have to decide this now. You do not have to decide this right now." We drove the rest of the way home in silence. I was under the age of 10 when I told my mother about my decision to not have children. And looking back, I know that many 10-year-olds may not have been seriously thinking about their futures or the state of the world, but I was. I thought about it all of the time. I was a sensitive child, sensitive to energies, emotions, and the ways of the world that didn't make any sense to me. I knew suffering was real and that I was suffering as were others. I didn't want to bring children into a world where they would suffer, and I don't think I understood how other people could continue to bring other beings into a world that was full of suffering. This line of thinking was not only influenced by my empathic nature and pensive personality. My brother was adopted. And I knew that on some level, the suffering I experienced was different from his. His birth family had given him up and mine had not. I imagined he longed to know more about where he was from, even though he seemed content with where he had ended up, with us, me and my mother. The tears my mother would allow to run down her face late at night when she thought we were sleeping let me know she was suffering too. My father had left us, and even though he was no longer physically in our home, the ghost of him was everywhere. And the way he haunted my mother made her suffer. I knew my grandfather Fred was also suffering. He would hide out in his room, drink whiskey, and want to be left alone. I think he was trying to find some peace in a world that felt anything but peaceful to him. I knew that the children my mother taught in her special education classes were suffering too. My mother would take me on home visits with her, and I saw firsthand environments where parents who have been neglected repeat the cycle of neglect with their children in turn. I remember these families not having enough food, safe and clean shelter, and stability within their homes. I was suffering too. I was the only Black girl in my class in elementary school. I felt isolated and alone and knew that the way I was suffering because of an educational system that didn't value Black bodies was different from my friend Allison's experience as a white-bodied girl. Though she suffered too. Her parents worked all of the time and she felt neglected and unseen. Still, her suffering felt different from mine. As I grew older, my questions about the nature of suffering didn't decrease. In fact, my curiosity increased so much that at times, all I could see and feel was the suffering, which didn't allow me to notice what else was present in my life or the world. When I was 14, I was hospitalized in a psychiatric ward for a month. Looking back now, I think all the suffering I'd witnessed, was aware of, and had experienced up until that point felt so overwhelming that I didn't feel like I could be in my body anymore. I am not sure I was really suicidal. I don't think so. But I didn't have any other way to describe how I was feeling other than stating to my psychiatrist that I wanted to die. What I really believe I wanted to convey is that I wanted all of the suffering inside me and in our world to stop. When I went to college, my awareness of suffering continued. I watched one of my friends having to fight an institution that was hell-bent on defaming her after she came forward to tell her story of being sexually assaulted by a group who were part of a fraternity known for this kind of behavior. I sat with her for hours over the course of a year and listened to all the dirty tactics the college used to try to keep her silent and really to make her go away. Eventually, she did. After college, I went to graduate school to become a clinical social worker. In so many ways, it made sense that I decided to train to sit with and support people as they move through their suffering. The entire field of social work originated from a desire to decrease the injustice that exists in our world. Injustice emerging from the pattern of suffering we have created and continue to perpetuate for ourselves and others. While I was in graduate school, I was introduced to Hatha Yoga. At first, I was mainly practicing asana, and then a teacher introduced me to yoga philosophy by reading from texts such as the Yoga Sutras in his classes. My interest in yoga and learning more about the eight-limb path was piqued, and I came to believe the practice of yoga might be a pathway for us as a collective to turn toward our suffering, better understand it, and mitigate future suffering. I believed the pathway of yoga might not only help us better understand suffering, but also support us in creating conditions for justice in our world. My interest in yoga turned into a more profound devotion to the practice and path of yoga, which eventually led to me deepening my study of yoga by attending 200-hour and 300-hour yoga teacher trainings, followed by many other trainings over the past 14 years. Throughout this time, most of my yoga practice has been explicitly rooted in better understanding and teaching about the intersection of yoga and justice, and how to radicalize the practice of yoga to create a just world. This aligns with what yoga teaches us, to remove obstacles that are in the way of us experiencing samadhi, liberation. My study of yoga has included the study of the Yoga Sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, and other sacred yogic texts. These sacred yogic texts have taken time for me to digest, and I continue to study and deepen my understanding of the content offered in them. I strive to apply the teachings to my own lived experience and the current cultural context. The Yoga Sutras are said to have originated from a man named Patanjali, and throughout time have been translated by many teachers and scholars. The root word sutra comes from the same root as the medical term suture. Sutra means thread. The 196 sutras are threaded together to provide a map of how to live a peaceful and happy life. Book 2 of the Yoga Sutras, the Satanapada, teaches that there are 5 afflictions that cause us to suffer. These are called the kleshas. The 5 kleshas are avidya, ignorance, ashmita, over-identification with the ego.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?